welcome to the League of Moves podcast. This is Zachary Strebeck, your host and your resident game lawyer. On this episode, I'm talking with Jordan Draper. He's a game designer and kind of a renaissance man. Welcome, Jordan. How are you?
Hey, good. Thanks for having me, Zach.
Great. Great to have you on. So the first thing I always do on the show is to kind of discuss your background and how you got into the games industry and what you did before, whether it's education or jobs that you had before.
Sure. So I probably have a bit of a strange background, but I feel that most people in the industry do. They seem to come from different ranges of places. Yeah. So I started out as a musician. So from the time I was 9, I got my first drum set. And I played for 12 to 15 years following that in various bands, did some touring across the U.S., signed on a small label, and thought I wanted to do that for the rest of my life when I was in my early 20s. But it really wasn't bringing in much income, and I got a little tired of touring with mostly alcoholics. So I decided that was probably not something that would be good for the long term for me, at least in that type of environment. I started doing some solo work with electronic music and everything else on the side, but I was studying design at the same time, mostly graphic design and product design. And I experimented and just made all kinds of things for like the next 5 years after that. So I handmade a sofa, and I learned how to do jewelry smithing and welding and all kinds of stuff. And I opened an Etsy store. So I was selling like custom phone cases that I had designed, big, huge, like 3x6 foot wall graphics that were just kind of hand illustrated things that I had put together. And I was running that business for 5 to 7 years. And that was my main income. I had a job working at an old letterpress shop for a while during that time as well, which was really fun. So I got to run some of the old like Heidelberg presses and Platin presses. Yeah, it was a lot of fun mixing the inks and putting them on the ink drum. And then you're like controlling this fine tuned machine. I was mostly printing wedding invitations because that seems to be what people want, that like classic look for these days. But that was an awesome job. I didn't make much money, but I had a blast doing it. And then I've been playing games since about 2007. And after 7 or 8 years, I decided to take a crack at putting my own design on Kickstarter. And it did okay. It wasn't hugely successful, but it was successful enough that I got to make some handmade copies of my game. And then I did that a few more times until I had a following and got to the point where I was mass producing games, because there was just no way I could keep up with the handmade quantities with thousands of games needing to go out. And I've been scaling up my business ever since then. I closed down my Etsy store after like my second game and just went to full time making my own games, because I do all the artwork and graphic design, manufacturing, Kickstarter, all of it just by myself. So it's definitely a full-time job, because I'm releasing now about 3 to 5 games a year. And that's kind of a very brief history of what got me from there to here.
Very cool. No, that's very interesting. Yeah. You're a multi-talented individual. So I think a lot of maybe successful game designers have that kind of multiple talented skill set, right?
Yeah, it helps to bring in outside perspectives, I think, too, and skills.
Yeah. When you hit, you have a very interesting graphic design style, obviously, in your games. Do you want to tell some people or tell the audience about maybe your style of game and your philosophy Sure. behind the games?
Yeah, I'd say I'm quite heavily influenced from my time living in Japan. I speak Japanese and lived in Tokyo for almost 3 years now, about 2.5 years. And I mean, Zach knows as well, living in Asia, that it's a complete different world. And the culture there will kind of open your mind or break your mind in a certain way to start looking at things differently, which I love. It can, for sure. So I have a minimalist style, I would say. I like to keep things very small, concise, and as straightforward as possible. So all my games are like quite small boxes, but they have like very unique high-end 3D pieces inside. So for example, I have a game about Japanese vending machines that has like tiny drinks and crates and vending machine in it. And I mostly just keep everything like absolute bare minimum with the graphic design, keep it clean, make the information readable and understandable, but still like nice looking. I think there's too much muddiness now with people getting fancy with stuff and like the artwork kind of taking over everything in the game. So I like to keep it like monochromatic and simple, and then let the gameplay and the components kind of shine for what's there, and open up exploration with that as a context to work within.
Very cool. Yes. They all look amazing. So I invite anyone to go check out, your site, JordanDraper.com.
Yeah, that's right.
You currently are living where?
So right now I'm in Oslo, Norway. But I'm jumping between here and Tokyo, I guess. I'm going back to Tokyo in November for about a month. And the reason why I'm jumping around so much is both because I'm going to conventions, and it doesn't make sense to keep flying back and forth everywhere, because I have sort of three bases, one in Salt Lake City, Utah, one in Oslo, Norway, and then one in Tokyo, Japan, for various reasons. but I like traveling, and
I agree.
Yeah, just jumping around everywhere, like in between conventions and everything, is pretty nice for my lifestyle, because I don't have to be anywhere for work. And I guess I'm living the freelancer life, or whatever this new lifestyle is called, that the sort of millennial generation fell into. Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's nice to not have to be anywhere. It's quite, a nice privilege that I don't take for granted. But it's also a lot of work to worry about having to travel all over the place, not being home base. So, kind of some fun side fact, I'm working on some shipping container apartments that I'm doing that are like prefabricated and completely modular, interior as well. I went to school for architecture and dropped out before I finished my degree, but basically I've been designing these for the last 3 or 4 years and planning to build some and implement them and hopefully open up some small lots with like 3 or 4 apartments on them. And that's the goal, is to have those in these country bases that I have, so I can just travel in between and kind of rent out the other units as I need to. That's my other passion in life that I'm using money from the board games to hopefully fund after a couple more years.
Do you watch The Walking Dead by any chance?
I've seen various episodes. Yeah.
I mean, so recently in the last season, there's a character who lives in this like junkyard or something, and she has like an apartment inside a shipping container. It's funny. When you said it, nice. It's all like nice wood and everything inside, but outside it's all junk and trash and everything.
Just
reminded me of that.
That's kind of the nice appeal that I love about it too. I mean, people think about like small, if you have a small apartment, or you have a small home, it's going to be trash or something. But I think quite the opposite is true, because every little detail, because you have such little space, becomes like precious and awesome.
Right. You need to design it very well. Like I've seen a lot of those tiny house type shows where, you know, everything's sort of expanding and coming out, and, you know, the table needs to double as something else. And, you know, just, it really needs to be thought through, everything. That's interesting stuff. Do you find that informs your game design at all?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know which would come first or later, but like whenever I start designing a game, I have standard size boxes that I work with now, which are quite small. And I always have to think about what can fit in the box before I start really jumping into everything, because I can't go wild, since that's the first constraint, which is fun. I love having that as a constraint, but it is like something that kind of leads to the design at the end.
Right. Do you feel like you want to expand at some point and do maybe not some epic miniatures dungeon crawling game or anything like that, but, you know, something a little bigger, maybe with a board or, you know, what have you? Do you have plans for that kind of thing, or do you want to stay small?
I mean, so far I've managed to make something big along those lines. Like Tokyo Metro takes up a huge amount of table space. I mean, probably like 1 meter by 2 meters or something, is if you wanted to spread it out nicely, with a big fabric map. But luckily I'm I've not had an itch to do that because I'm always traveling, and carrying around that box just to even demo it would be a nightmare for me. but I am licensing out some other designs to some other companies, and they, since they're publishing the game, like, I'm not controlling the box size, and those will probably be a bit bigger with some bigger components. So we'll see how those turn out. I have no idea exactly what they're going to end up being as an end product, but they're coming probably in 2019. I will have three games published from other companies.
I'll have to have you back on. So let's talk a little, let's jump back a little bit. I want to talk about the digital nomad type lifestyle. I actually talked about this recently in my newsletter that goes out to my fans or whatever. Ed talked about, you know, the benefits of that, mostly for video game developers. I've never seen it as really too viable for board game and tabletop game developers, but maybe I'm wrong. I mean, it just seems like a lot of the work is kind of playtesting with people and doing it in person, but maybe you have a different perspective on that. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have a good point going both ways. I do miss having a consistent game group to play with, but at the same time, if you travel a lot, you, I think, inevitably come to the understanding that culture is different and kind of shapes and defines the people that live in these other places a little bit. And to have a nice holistic understanding of what the world is like as an economy or as a society, you have to travel. And the same could be said for playing games with diverse groups of people from different cultures. I think that's actually helped my designs in a big way, and why I have such an interest from more of the Western world, if you can say that, into like the Japanese style games and that aesthetic, is because they're interested in that side of it. And then on the flip side of that, I have some Western influence just because I've grown up in the United States. And people in Japan have been interested in that aspect of the game. And this kind of unity coming together has been really interesting to see from both sides for me, and to talk to other Japanese publishers and Japanese people who I've become friends with that I've played the games with. They love to connect and see their culture kind of represented in an interesting way. And I like getting input in that as I'm building the games as well. I think it's definitely possible to be a nomad and do board game development. I actually used to make some video games as well, like just apps for phones, but I didn't make hardly anything from them, so it wasn't worth it. But
tough industry.
Making games is a very tough industry. Games is much easier. Board games are much easier. But I love traveling, and I think it only opens up horizons for looking for interesting stuff.
Very cool. Yeah, I mean, I live in Thailand most of the time. Currently in Budapest and doing a little kind of European tour over the next month or so. But yeah, it's
nice.
Definitely cool. I mean, I see that there are board game shops in all these cities. I don't often go to them because I'm usually working. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing. And a lot of times it's so funny when I go to this in Bangkok, they have a board game store, and I'm looking around at their game selection, and they have all these games for my clients that are, you know, a lot of them are small game publishers, but it's just amazing to see that, you know, they have such a wide reach that they're showing up in Thailand. And then I don't know if people are playing them, but there's people, you know, doing wargaming, and there's people doing all kinds of different board games. It's very interesting to see, you know, it's not, I guess, we kind of think it's an American thing or a European thing, but I mean, everywhere people are playing these games, which is super cool.
Yeah, I always get surprised actually by the numbers from my Kickstarters of like how many backers are from each city. And like Singapore was the number one city, which is just, I didn't expect it at all. I mean, I thought Japan or Tokyo was up there. Bangkok was pretty up there too. And I sold quite a few like retail packages to Bangkok. I go there pretty often as well, because I have a friend mm-hmm. from Bangkok, who I met in Japan, that I visit, but it's just like you're saying, you don't really realize how far the hobby stretches, but, I'm always counting like 30 plus countries that I'm shipping to from Kickstarters. And it's nice to see that there's a global interest in, you know, distribution of that, because that's how you can really help spread the culture and ideals or whatever you're trying to say through your games, or make people happy just to play games anyway.
Yeah, definitely. So what are you doing in Norway? What is your connection to Norway, if you don't mind me asking?
So I'm dating a Norwegian girl. So basically just up here at the moment, she's doing her graduate degree, and I've been here off and on every once in a while, just to visit and say hey. And you know, Norway's a nice place, much nicer than I think anyone realizes who wouldn't think to travel here. They have a huge oil fund and a nice infrastructure being built, and they have beautiful nature and fjords and everything. So I don't have any complaints ever being up here.
One of these days, I've never been.
It's expensive, but it's beautiful and awesome.
So maybe this is going veering off course. So sorry, audience, but is it expensive? Like the cost of everything, or if you were to live there, you know, I know that the taxes are quite high compared to an American. Just everything is expensive.
All of the above, really. It's like one of the top three cities for renting and real estate prices. And everything else is pretty expensive as well. Just to buy like regular groceries and food. If you want to eat out, it's like $20 a meal minimum, which is a bit crazy. But yeah, you could probably get by like unless they like to. There's like so many weird traditional Norwegian dishes that are cheap to make. Like they just put milk and like white flour together, and then they heat that up and put some cinnamon and sugar and butter on it. And yeah, like that's a meal. It's actually not, it's not bad, right. But it's also like, yeah, in the States, it probably would not
have the same reception. We would fry it first.
Yeah, true.
Well, I mean, I always hear that Tokyo is really expensive, but actually I lived there for what, 3 or 4 months, and I didn't find it to be particularly expensive, especially coming from Los Angeles or, you know, or some of the cities in America. I don't know. It could get by. I mean, it's one of those things I always tell people, well, if you want to be really cheap, go somewhere like Thailand, where it's incredibly cheap. But you know, if you can make some money online, a few $1,000 a month, you can live in most places and get by and you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's totally true. You can, I think I always get blown away by like the median income in the States, just like, I don't know, 45 grand or whatever. If you make that much money, you could live happily and like conveniently anywhere in the world, really. I completely agree. Going to Japan too, like there's also places you can rent just month by month through companies like Oak House and some other places in Tokyo. And if you had a month of free time, you could totally just go there and pay like $1,000 or less for rent at a temporary place. And I would suggest doing that, actually. I think that's one of the coolest experiences.
I did one called Sakura House. And they had, I mean, the place I stayed was super nice in the little, it shared a bathroom with 4 other people, but I mean, I sleep late. I don't wake up at the same time as everyone else. So that was no problem. I don't know. Yes. It was an unforgettable experience.
Nice.
I love going there. And so I hope to, I think I'm not going to be able to make it in November, but in May, I think I'll be going out there for,
over the game market.
So yeah, if you're going to be out there in May, we can meet up.
Nice. Yeah, we totally should. Oh man, that's a nice time too, because that's usually around when the cherry blossoms happen, and Japan just goes crazy for that because there's like all across Tokyo and the rest of Japan really, but mostly in Tokyo, there's like some huge parks with like big Matsuri celebrations, and they've got like street food and everything is pink and there's flowers everywhere, and there's just people out having a good time. It's a really cool cultural experience that you just don't know about until you go there, I think.
So audience, everyone needs to get over there and check it out. So tell me a little bit more about the tabletop gaming scene in Tokyo. I mean, how would you say that it differs from in the West or in the US?
Yeah, it's quite different, firstly, because of the publishers that are there. So I would say like half the games that you find in game stores are foreign games that have mostly been translated to Japanese and republished by local publishers. But everything else is like these just one-off, random, a lot of the time handmade games that are from people who aren't professional publishers, who maybe just do it as a hobby, or maybe they are publishing stuff and they're just doing it as like a side gig. I've become friends with quite a few Japanese publishers, and most of them have full-time jobs that they're doing, and they're just publishing stuff on the side. And a lot of them, their trade is already in graphic design or some other design field, and they'll just take those skills and like make a game completely by themselves and then publish it at Tokyo Game Market, maybe have it picked up by some of their other friends, because it seems to be a tight-knit community over there as well. And then you'll just find it in stores and it'll be out of print, because they'll only print like between 50 and 500 copies. And that's like pretty typical. That's just nothing like the industry is in Europe or the US, where you'll be printing like thousands of copies and everything is about like getting into retail or distribution or even doing direct sales or getting a big boost from a Kickstarter. Like none of that really exists there. Their like equivalent of a Kickstarter, for example, is just going to Tokyo Game Market and releasing like a new game as their thing at their booth. They'll sell out completely of their 500 copies or whatever. And sometimes that's it. And then they just make something else next time. So the culture of games over there is completely different. They're quite well versed in Western games as well, but they, I think, mostly hit on the bigger titles. Like most of the people that I've met aren't super into a lot of the like niche titles from Europe or from the US, just because they don't make it over there. And they have so many Japanese games that are unique that they don't really need that. But I'm actually, I'll make a little pre-announcement here just for anybody who's listening that knows, but I'm going to be publishing some Japanese designer games that I'm sort of changing, retheming, or doing a little development on that don't exist anywhere but in Japan, so that I can bring them to the rest of the world. And yeah, I'll be releasing some small box games in 2019.
Is the philosophy of game design different there? Like, are the games markedly different, or are you seeing a lot of the same kind of concepts that we see in Western games?
No, they're completely different. I feel like I've fallen away from playing a lot of heavier Euro style games and just starting to play these like light to midweight Japanese games, because first of all, they don't have space, so they always have small boxes. Like you just don't see any big boxes coming from Japanese publishers, which is nice, because that constraint already like signifies that there's going to be a different kind of design inside. They have to think simple and use less stuff. And then their concepts are just off the wall. Like I bought a game that had a bunch of different beans inside of this container, this cardboard container, and you had to open it up and like shake out these beans. And that was like an element of playing the game. I mean, you just probably would never see that over here, stuff like that. And they like to use weird themes with food and animals and roasting coffee.
I've whatever. Seen the coffee roasting game. I think I played it at Essen a couple years ago. Maybe that's a different mm-hmm. game. I think it was a Taiwanese company that was doing that one. Anyway, but I did buy a couple Japanese games at Gen Con a few years ago. And one was about sheep and multiplying your sheep. And another one was about trying to gain weight.
Yeah.
You had to eat different.
Diet and Friends, right. Probably. That's, that's
actually never really played it. Game. I just bought it because it looked cool and never had a chance. Play it.
Oh well, if we meet up, we definitely need to play it. It's amazing. The designer is really fun. We're working on a judo hanbaiki game for a while as well. They're just everything with the themes is unique and fun. I love
That's awesome. So next for you is to continue your publishing. Do you still use Kickstarter as the vehicle for funding the games?
Yeah, so every January I'm doing 3 Tokyo series games until I have all 12 published. There's just no way I can afford to manufacture them without doing that. And because I have a little bit of extra from that each time, I'm starting to publish some smaller box games as well. And I just started making games that are a roll of washi tape. So you just get this roll of tape and you bring it with you and you can stick it on the wall or whatever and write with pens to play. And I'm going to be releasing some more of those over the next couple of years. So that's like my core plan until the end of 2020, I believe, will be the one that all 12 games have come out and I can kind of put a nice close to the series after a long amount of work. And for anyone who doesn't know about my games, they're the Tokyo Series games. You can play them all independently or mix them together. And there's like guest designers that have come in and made their own rules using some of the pieces in a few of the titles. So the whole idea of the series is that you have like hundreds of games to choose from, and they're very immersive 3D pieces that create an environment that kind of resembles what Tokyo culture is like.
After that, the Oslo series starts. Is there a game about smiling in photos or something like that? No. Not smiling? Right? They hate smiling there?
Yeah, they probably should be.
Norwegians, but...
They're very like internally, not internally focused, but they have a hard time saying hello in public and stuff. They think that's weird. But
that's
once they get to know you, then it's weird. They, yeah, it's just like Japan, I guess. But
lining up for buses, maybe.
Yeah, I'm working on a few other
region thing, right? They line up for buses in really long spaced out lines.
Yeah, their public transport needs some help. That's to say the least. Coming from Japan, it's polar opposites. But yeah, I have some other like small mini series things that I'm kind of starting to work on, like the Japan designer series games and whatever, but no idea exactly what will come after. After I finish these, I want to start focusing on my architecture project with the shipping containers, because I'd like to help get those into some developing countries for housing to help some people out, and also sell them in other places if it works. And then kind of have both companies together. Want to start doing some lifestyle goods as well, because I love products and I was kind of doing that on Etsy for a while. I want to start making some more notebooks and useful tools that are minimal design, long lasting stuff. But, you know, I have too many ideas and just enough time maybe is the right way to put it.
Yeah. I've tried to buy some of those like fancy journals that sort of tell you what to write in them. It's never really clicked with me, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just waiting for the one.
No, I mean, I'm the same way. I love Muji Tokyo and in all of Japan. They make the best minimal stuff. And I've had like 6 years of notebooks, journals that I've done through them, because you can kind of just make it whatever you want. And the notebook itself is very minimal. So I'm all about starting from something blank, like very well designed, very durable and well built, and then kind of turning it and personalizing it. That's a good philosophy, I think.
They have Mujis in Thailand as well. So I did buy a bunch of stuff the last time I was there.
True, yeah.
Some notebooks. The notebooks, you know, they stay empty, unfortunately. I carry it with me all the time. Actually, it's in my bag right now, but I have not written one thing in it. So maybe that's my New Year's resolution. Write something in a notebook.
You should. Yeah, you should start. I've been logging like daily notes. I write my design stuff in there, and I have like a calendar, and I have books I want to read. I log all of my finances from everything. So like for me, it's like this big statistical tool that I can bring with everywhere. I don't have to worry about losing from a hard drive crash.
Mine's on the cloud.
Whatever else.
I use apps for that stuff. You're like, oh man, I don't know. How old are you?
Nice.
Now you
I'm 29.
There's a movie called Taking Care of Business with Jim Belushi or something from a long time ago, James Belushi. And it's about a guy who has like his whole life is in this like little notebook and it gets lost. And I don't know. Anyway, exactly.
Yeah, that's probably going to be my life at some point. All
right. No, I think that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you for coming on the show, Jordan.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Zach, and keep up the good work with all the stuff.
Where can our listeners find you if they want to reach out to you or check out your games?
Yeah, you can find me. So my website's jordandraper.com. You can email me, talk@jordandraper.com. And then I'm also on Twitter and Instagram with @thejordandraper.
And you can find me at gamelawyerblog.com. You can read more about the legal aspects of game development and check out other episodes of this podcast. I've also got a YouTube channel that I'm going to be starting up over the next few months. If anyone's got any questions or topics that I could answer or cover there, send me an email. You can do it through the contact form on that website. So I'll see you all next time.